This is True Tales of Luxury with me, Mariella Frostrup.
But I think the best compliment I got is one person in Paris that I love who told me, you know, when my wife is wearing your dress, I want to make love with her.
In this series of podcasts, I talk to people at the top of the creative industries about their work and their relationship to luxury. This week, my guest is a couture and ready-to-wear designer who manages to combine architectural and geometrical cuts with floating lines and delicate fabrics. His fusion of the hyper-feminine and perfectly cut tailoring has enabled Alexis Mabille to build a hugely successful brand, beloved by celebrities and mere mortals alike. So, Alexis, welcome.
Hello.
We're in the penthouse suite here at Harrods. I'm sure your clothes have made this journey many times, but have you yourself spent a lot of time in Harrods?
Yes, of course, because it's when you come to London, it's part of the touristing things to do. So I think the first time I was a children when I came here, maybe with the school. And when I started to do my own business, we were like dreaming to be here. And then a few years later, I'm in the shop. So it's great and exciting.
How did you celebrate that moment?
Oh, I'm celebrating a lot of things, but of course we opened champagne to celebrate with the team about what we have as new clients and new retails. And
so, tell me a little bit about you. You were born in Lyon.
Yes.
Tell me a bit about your family and your life then. You weren't surrounded by fashion designers at that point,
not,
I presume.
Not really. In fact, in my family there is a lot of artists. I mean, like painters, singers, architects, decorators from 19th century, and quite eccentric peoples. But I'm from a very bourgeois family from Lyon, and I interacted with all those like crazy people in my family since my childhood, and they gave me a bit of them, you know. And I decided to very early, in fact, to do clothes. It was not just about fashion or. It could have been like a theater costume at this time. It was a relationship with fabrics. Of course, Lyon is a kind of capital about silk. When I said I was maybe 5 or 6 years old, I want to do costumes, theater costumes.
What, you said that at 5 or 6?
Yeah, and I started to do it. You know, I started to sew and to do things that's cool. And
did you actually learn to sew?
By myself, yes.
You taught yourself to sew?
And when you don't know how to do, you start.
So 5 or 6, what was it about costumes that excited you? Do you remember? And what sort of costumes were you made? Like dinosaur costumes?
No. And I think it was more about like historical stories. And even it was like the full period of Mr. Saint Laurent with the Ballet Russe period. And then Christian Lacroix. My mother loved fashion. And she bought a lot of magazines. So maybe I had this occasion, you know, to interact with the pages, to look at it, and after to start playing with my sisters, dressing them, doing costume for them, etc., etc. But at the beginning, I really wanted to work more for opera or ballet and to create costumes. And then when I started to assist during my internships when I was a student at the Lyon Opera, which is a great production with the team of costumes. Finally, I was a bit like frustrated because at this time, it was not so creative like today. Today, there is a lot of contemporary pieces. But at this time, it was more like, you know, old stories that we all know, La Traviata or Molière things.
All in big dresses.
Big dresses and even like more restorations of costumes, but not really creations. And that's how I decided to go more in creation because I was a bit frustrated not to give my own ideas. And I decided to go in the fashion way at this time.
And is that when you went to the Chambre Syndicale de la Couture Parisienne?
Not yet.
Not yet. So tell me what happened between Lyon Opera.
I did very like classic studies, because I wanted to do it in like economy. So nothing with fashion. But in this period, I started to do little business. I had, you know, clients, private clients. I was doing wedding dress to friends of friends.
And studying economics?
Yeah. And I did the business too of decoration with flowers for weddings. So everything creative was a good occasion to have fun and to do my little business.
And after, but weddings must be quite frustrating because weddings, people don't tend to go crazy for a wedding, do they? They tend to stay very traditional. But
yes, but in a way, you know, they they love to spend money to get the unique moment. And even the decor is very important, you know. So even if in France, weddings are more like more classical maybe than other countries, but it was a good occasion, you know, to start getting clients and being direct linked with them to make them beautiful and happy.
And probably suited a designer like you as well, because you've described yourself as not a minimalist at all.
No.
And I suppose that wedding dresses would be the one time in most women's lives when they don't go minimal either.
It depends, you know, it's more about the personality. When I do a dress for a client, I'm not going to do something which is like covering totally the girl in terms of personality. She needs to express herself and to be beautiful. So sometimes you need to be very sleek and quiet to make her perfect. And other women, they need this kind of maximalism, full of ruffles and lace, etc. It's really like, that's what I love in couture today. I meet all my clients for the first meeting, to really go in the right direction to make them beautiful. Because when you look at a woman in a party, it's not about just the dress. You need to see her and say, wow, she's beautiful.
And I think we all want to come to you now, Alexis.
Because and after you look at the jewelry, the dress, the makeup, etc. But I think the best compliment I got is one person in Paris that I love who work in the fashion business, who told me, you know, when my wife is wearing your dress, I want to make love with her.
That's and so I think, French.
Yeah, but you know, from, and he's Italian, but from an Italian guy, you know, 60 years old, and for him, and it's true, it's all about the good match in between personality and Annabelle. You know, it's very interesting to see who is coming to buy my clothes, because sometimes we don't even think some of personalities could go for it. And this I love when I'm dressing like a big celebrities like Lady Gaga, for example. I'm totally the opposite style of Lady Gaga. But when she comes to us, she's taking very classic dresses and she, you know, with her makeup and her attitude, it becomes super cool.
So going back again.
Yeah.
Lyon and to economics Paris. And to wedding dresses and flowers. And how did you escape?
I never escaped because I'm still, but after I went to Paris to do La Chambre Syndicale because I had a lot of conversation with Christian Lacroix this time. I was,
how come?
You know, I was,
down the street.
I was 14 years old. I was writing letters to him and he started to answer to me. So during almost 3 years, we discussed like this, exchanging some letters.
Letters, really?
Almost every month. And,
Wait. What did you say to him in your first letter? You're like, hi, I'm 14. I live in Lyon.
Yeah.
I think you're cool.
Yeah, something like this. And I send him some drawings and he sent me back like a drawing with, I still have all the letters at home because it's fun to keep this conversation.
How amazing that he replied.
He loved to write and he pushed me to come and to do La Chambre Syndicale. So I was okay. So if the master tell I need to do that, let's go for it.
And you met him, I presume.
Yeah. Much later, in fact. I met him, it was fun. It was at his show with a friend of mine, with a couture client. And I was super shy to meet him because you can imagine, you know, even more because when you speak with someone by letter and you never see him after that. And it was very after the show, so he was super busy, etc. And he gave me the wedding bouquet of the show. And I was like, but it was super sweet, you know. It was a bit like, ah, I'm super happy to meet you.
And he knew immediately who you were.
After we crossed in like fashion. But even like 2 weeks ago, he sent me a little message on Instagram. So we never really get so much moment together, but we keep this little thing in between.
That's incredible. Yeah. So he encouraged you. So you came to Paris. You went to the Chambre Syndicale.
De la Couture.
De la Couture Parisienne. I'm saying it because when I say it, it sounds almost English. And when you say it, it sounds impossibly difficult and French. But of course, this is a fashion school. I mean, it's associated with the highest level of couture, isn't it? And so at that point, had you decided that that was what you wanted to do?
The thing is, I knew how to sew and to cut. So it was more to perfection my techniques. I did it in 2 years instead of 4 years.
Yes, and how come? Because stop, that's really difficult too to do that.
I think after a few weeks, the first year, I was very bored. So that it was a bit like boring for me to redo the basics. So they proposed me to do in 1 year, 2 years. It was difficult because it was a lot of
work.
It was an intense year.
But you taught yourself almost everything before you got there then.
Yeah, but you're never sure it's the right technique because at La Chantecale, the professors are like people who worked in big houses before. So it's very interesting because they know perfectly their job. So they're very professional.
So when you left the college, you'd worked a lot on your own and taught yourself a lot. Then you'd gone to this incredible college. How was it to actually work with designers and have to compromise your taste for theirs? Because I presume that's one of the things that happens when you...
Yeah, but it's fun. You know, it's like a game. It's like being an actor. You come in a team, you speak with a team, and you have a designer. But me, I got the chance, really, because I did a lot of internship before.
Did a lot of...
Internship.
Oh, yeah.
At Emmanuel Ungaro and Nina Ricci, etc. My first job was at Dior with John Galliano. I'd started with an internship there, but I was not directly linked to him in the house. And then we met in the lift. And he asked me what I was doing, so I told him what I was doing. And the next week, I had a convocation to go at the studio, so I was what happened to me.
Were you nervous?
And then they proposed me to work on the accessories and the jewelry. And then I did, like, during 10 years, all the custom jewelry for Dior.
The accessories and jewelry that you did were hugely successful.
Yeah.
And that was something quite different for you, though, wasn't it, to be working on those things rather
because
than...
Because, in fact, when they asked me to see my book and my work, I did for myself some jewelries in kind of wax. It's not a wax, it's, I don't know how you call that. It's something that you cook in color, a kind of
like
plastic.
Like a resin.
You can, yeah, a resin. And they loved those pieces. And they asked me to start, and I was, okay, let's go, let's try. Which I love to do, because I learned a new job with him. But it was amazing to work with John. It was almost 10 years, so it's...
And then you left in 2005 to set up on your own.
Yeah.
Quite scary or no?
No, I knew that I had to do it.
Why did you have to do it?
Because I had to do it.
Pourquoi?
It's instinctive. I don't know.
And did you have a plan? I mean...
No.
Did you...
yes, to do my collection and to present it, but I didn't plan anything.
Did your economics training come in handy at that point?
Maybe a bit, of course. But no, but I had a good start. Of course, at Dior, I knew a lot of people. I knew all the models because I have very strong hands. And
what's that got to do with it?
And the girls, you know, I was doing the corsets for each show.
Oh, and they remembered how you manhandled them.
They remember me. And even the jewelries were so complicated in haute couture. So they all knew me because they were covered with kilos of jewelries. And then when I decided to start, everybody followed me, agencies, models, suppliers. And they were, okay, let's help you.
Did you get a backer? How did you get a backer?
No, you know, it was just... It's something that now it's impossible to do it like this. But a lot of people work almost for free to help me because we had a good relationship and it started like this.
Why do you say it's impossible to do now? That's interesting.
Because now there is new laws everywhere about like, you know, and control about everything. So it's forbidden to work for free. It's forbidden to have friends at night for a job. It's everything is forbidden. So, I think my first show cost me maybe like 3,000 euros, something, which is crazy. Today, it's totally impossible to do a show for that.
And was it your first show? Was it during Fashion Week? So you were up there with the big guys.
Yes.
Yeah, very
much so. But at this time, I was a bit the only one. And when I decided to do that, the Federation was like, oulala, it's dangerous for you. You will be like with big brands. So what will happen to you? You will lose your money and whatever. And I was, oh, but let's try. No. Anyway, the risk is too bankrupt.
I haven't got anything anyway, really.
And they proposed me to present during haute couture. To do a kind of focus because haute couture is less crowded in terms of shows and you have the best press. They just asked me to play the game to make it like couture appealing. So the mood was couture, but it was ready to wear.
Did you know what your style was going to be? Did you know what your mark was going to be? Because you'd spent so long working with Galliano and, you know, so to find your own thing.
You do what you feel it's right. Sometimes it's better not to think too much. You just do. When you do your first collection, you can't really say this is my style.
You said happily that you're not a minimalist. So how would you describe yourself and your style? Are you a maximalist?
But not really. I think it's I love this balance in between genders, but not genders as we say today. It's more like I love to mix like the rigor of masculine craftsmanship with the fantasy of women's wardrobe. I think for me, it's more a question of attitude, allure, and the way you mix the piece.
But you were actually one of the very first people to recognize and to make clothes for, it's not a unisex market, but a sort of gender non-specific market, which was...
Everybody look at me like crazy at this time, but because the first collection was just pants, unisex pants. Same cut for both men and women, because I realized a lot of women, you love to buy men pants.
I love men's pants.
Well, men don't like to buy women's pants, but now today, you know, there is much more offers, but 15, 18 years ago, the men wardrobe was super basic, except if you go to Westwood or like crazy labels. And the idea was really to get like all the rich possibilities of the women wardrobe to the masculine techniques and masculine cut.
And pardon my ignorance, but were you selling these dresses to men as well as women?
Yeah, of course.
And the men were buying them without minding that they were for... Because as you say...
It was unisex, so you had a... And even you had a double label inside with the correspondence in between men's size and women's size. So we were selling to men's shops and to women's shops. And after, you know, it's just a question of how you wear it. And it was fun to see how it goes. And step by step, after I did some shirts, it was all about like kind of separates and bow ties.
So the bow tie. Where did that come in? I mean,
it just came from this idea about unisex. I was looking at what could be the accessory, which is like unisex in the past. And if you look at the 15th, 16th, 17th century, men were covered with bows and seals and ruffles, etc. And in the 19th century, it started to be very Protestant style. And I decided that maybe the bow tie would be fun to relaunch, because in France, it was the worst... the most old-fashioned piece that no men want to wear. And when I launched this little collection of bow tie, it became crazy. We started to sell it everywhere in the world. We could not even like deliver because everybody wanted those bow ties. And Karl Lagerfeld bought some of them, Mick Jagger. So it was a little madness around the bow tie, and people forgot that we're doing clothes. What I got? We need to remind that we are doing clothes.
So then you started making dresses that looked like bow ties.
But at the time, we are not doing dress yet. So like a shirt with details of bows and pants, etc. And then, you know, we developed our market and the clients were like, okay, but now we would love to get women wardrobe because we have a request of that. And I resist during many seasons. And after 4 years of doing unisex clothes, and I said, okay, let's do a few dresses. And we step in another world at this moment. But it's great because I kept, you know, the level of the concept during 4 years. And it's the base of the style, in fact.
The bow tie has become like your motif now, hasn't it?
But of course, we have bows every season, you know, because it's fun to keep that in there, because we have the chance to have something very very easy to recognize. Sometimes it's just a drapé on a dress. Sometimes it's just a detail inside of a dress that nobody knows, but it's embroidered with a little bow. But just a little story that I want to keep on the collection.
So tell me about the dresses, because you moved slightly reluctantly into the field of women's wear, really, yeah. You know, and you've created some incredible, extraordinary gowns. Tell me some of your favorites, maybe.
But what is funny, in fact, we started from ready-to-wear to arrive to couture, because everybody thinks we started to couture, but in fact, I didn't start with couture.
No, but that's because you sneaked in during couture
and,
week.
We and know after that. We switched, of course, because people had to know that it was ready to wear. When I started to do couture, I learned maybe more about like how to respect the beauty. And, I think my direction was never to do a revolution of craziness in the fashion world, but more to, which is a kind of eccentricity today, to be like respectful with women body. That means we are here to, I'm here to reshape a body, to use the best elements to make someone absolutely beautiful and charismatic, which is something I think we are missing sometime in our fashion world. And step by step, I rediscovered that really what was my leitmotiv was elegance. an intelligent attitude. It's not just about beauty. It's more about like a charisma attitude.
So you mentioned Lady Gaga earlier. Would she be top of your list of the sort of woman you like to dress because of her eccentricity and the fact that there's a tension between what you do and what she does?
What you said is, frankly, it was not my main direction, but they came to us. The same with Rihanna, Katy Perry, that we have the chance to dress all those super cool girls, and Beyoncé, and a lot of and more classical actress like Carole Bouquet that I love. And we started to dress her a few years ago, or Dita Von Teese. All those girls are so different. But what's the main link in between all of those women? They have a very strong personality. And the mix of my clothes with their personality makes something unusual, but every time very elegant, you know. And this, for me, it's great, even if someone is very streetwear and very R&B style, to get her one day really like super chic, super elegant.
Of course, everyone thinks of couture as the ultimate in luxury. You know, I mean, most people couldn't dream to afford it even. I wonder what you think is luxurious when it comes to fashion. How would you define luxury in fashion? Is it the quality of fabrics? Is it, you know, the accentuating of the positive and the disguising the negative?
The luxury could be, of course, the craftsmanship, the fabrics, in haute couture even more because you don't count the hours. So you can spend like 2 months on a dress, nobody care. In ready-to-wear, it's totally impossible because the price would be mad. But I think it's more the idea to get something specific and different and to get the access to creativity, which is kind of luxury, you know, creation.
I mean, you're very much the opposite of fast fashion, but fast fashion exists all around you. Do you see them as two completely different worlds? Do you think that you live in a...
You know, I think it's a choice. Either you want to do a big collection with everything in your collection, with t-shirts, shirts, pants, and whatever you need in a collection. And in that case, you need to maybe go more to fast fashion because you need to interact for the daily life. When you go to something much more like a cocktail or dressy daily clothes, it's more about a timeless attitude.
Do you keep all your samples? Where do you keep them? I mean, do you keep everything you've ever made?
No, not everything, because we can't keep everything. There is too much collections. But haute couture, we keep everything in the archives because we are still working with it. Because what is interesting is couture clients, they don't really care about the season. So sometimes they ask to see a dress from 3 years ago.
You know that quite recently there was a big Dior exhibition here at the V&A where you could kind of follow the journey of Dior through the years. If they did the same with you in 25, 30 years' time, what do you think that journey would show?
I never think about that kind of thing, you know. I know when I did the visit of the show in Paris, for me it was very emotional because a lot of my products were in the exhibition. But if I had to do the same with a kind of retrospective of myself, you know, it's too early to think about it.
Do you have any?
No, I never really think about that. You know, sometimes I don't even know about a few weeks ago, someone asked me how many collection I did. I never count, so I don't know. And I'm too young to be in a museum yet.
Of course you are. I wondered for you, surrounded by luxury items all the time, you know, fabrics and jewels, and what represents luxury for you? What do you think of?
No, but that's really a chance to get this possibility in your life to build a business which gives you the possibility to have the access of the suppliers and the craftsmanship. But I think my luxury would be more like the lifestyle which is going around. You know, life is full of things, and full of luxury is not just about what you can buy. And the way you receive and how you can make people interact all together. I'm quite good for that.
Well, I've heard that you bought an amazing apartment in Paris, which you sort of brought back to its former glory in painstaking detail.
No, that's true. I love decoration anyway. So for me, it's very like if I didn't go for fashion, I would have been an interior designer or And I love to do that. And on the side, I do sometimes like projects for clients. So. And it's very interesting to see how people, when they arrive in a place, if the light is nice, if, you know, if they feel good, they stay.
Is that why all your dinner parties are with just candlelight?
Yeah, that's true. You know that. no, that's true. And candlelight is very gold and make everyone beautiful. And the tableware is very important for me too. I'm buying a lot of things in the flea market to connect everything and to change the table every time.
Out of all those elements, you had to choose just one thing. What might it be?
I have a cover I bought in the flea market. Super comfortable, you know. And this, for me, it's a good mix of luxury because, of course, it's a quite expensive cover.
A cover for your bed?
Yeah, a cover for my bed.
What does it look like?
It's pink. Pink mohair. You know mohair, like a coat?
Yeah. But,
and it's so, like, fluffy, comfortable. And, you know, of course, it's a luxurious piece. It's a luxury to be in this mohair plaid, which is huge.
You know, yeah, I'm like, looking at you like you're a bit crazy because I've got a mohair rug on my bed and every night I have to kick it off because I can't stand the feeling on my feet. You don't mind it?
I don't mind. And my cat loves it too, so.
There's the thing about luxury. Everyone has their own interpretation of it, don't they?
No, but I think luxury, it's more about to feel good, you know. And when you feel good, it's such a luxury, but it's not given to everyone, you know. And sometimes it's like little details. Stupid details will change everything. And it could be a cover, it could be an object you like in your daily life. For example, me, if I have a dinner alone at my place, I will take the most beautiful plate with the nicest silverware and the nicest glass. It's not just for specific events. Because when you do a specific event, everybody is like breaking it anyway. So when I'm alone, I do my own.
Really?
Yeah. Even my cat is eating on a, she has a silver plate with 18th century little porcelain Chinese for food. And she drink in a crystal glass. And I mean, you know, this is luxury. Every day to make everything like nice around you and to feel good.
That is the ultimate luxury. But I'm going to offer you the luxury of going to any department in Harrods. Or which one would it be? Where would you go?
There is a lot of department. I would love to go jewelry department, which is amazing. I don't wear so much big necklace, but there is so amazing things. Yeah, I love the architecture of the space. You pass from Tutankhamun to Victorian place to something Art Nouveau. But when you come here, you are walking a lot because you want to see different moods, you know. And sometimes you're lost because everything is changing. I love that, you know, to be on the ground floor and to be lost and even the fashion spot to see how everything is like linked, the evening wear all together, and you discover new things that you don't know. It's very interesting.
Thank you very much, Alexis Mobile. You've been listening to True Tales of Luxury with me, Mariella Frostrup, and my guest, Alexis Mobile. Next week, I meet Dr. Marwa Ali. She's the aesthetic doctor whose less is more approach has made her the go-to woman for clients all over the world. This series is recorded in Harrods in London.